When Bart and Krista Halderson were reported missing in July 2021 by their son Chandler, the police began their usual inquiries. They had no idea that within days they would have most of the answers, and those answers would be brutal. I'm Charlie, and welcome to Crime Lines. Welcome to Crime Lines and the first episode of May. As you know, the second week of the month is my scheduled week off, but keep an eye out for another holiday-adjacent collab with other podcasters. For those not in North America, the holiday I am referring to is Mother's Day. Shane from the Foul Play podcast always does an amazing job putting these collaborations together, and the feedback has been overwhelmingly in favor of them, which is why I keep doing them. So keep an eye out next week for that. But let's get into this week's episode. This episode was recommended to me by my son, Xander, and he's not really into true crime, but I think he heard of the case, and since he knows I'm interested in true crime, he immediately assumed I would be interested in it as well. And I'm not saying he's wrong about that. We are going to start with the Halderson family. Bart and Krista Halderson both grew up in Wisconsin and married in 1994. They soon welcomed two sons. Mitchell was first, and then 2 years later, they had Chandler. Bart worked as a certified accountant, and Krista was an administrative assistant. As parents, they worked well together. Krista was the one that was home more, and according to Mitchell, she was a bit of a helicopter parent. She wanted to know what they were doing, where they were going, who was going to be there, all of that. But she was also very warm. She was a warm and nurturing, hovering mother. Bart, who worked long hours, was not home as much, but he loved spending time with the family as he could. He was the stricter parent, whereas Krista was a little bit more indulgent, which brought balance to their upbringing. When the boys were mostly grown, Bart and Krista bought a beautiful home with pond access in the Windsor, Wisconsin area. Mitchell finished college and lived about 30 minutes away in Madison with his fiancée. Chandler had moved out of the house in 2019 and shared an apartment with a friend, but that didn't last, and at some point in 2020, Chandler moved back home. Chandler, in his early 20s, was enrolled in college at the Madison Area Technical College, and he was in an IT program studying both IT and renewable resource engineering. MATC offers associate's degrees, technical diplomas, and certificates. During what looked to be Chandler's last semester at MATC, he worked an internship with American Family Insurance as an IT specialist. In addition to this, as a strong swimmer, Chandler also volunteered with both the Madison Police and the Department of Natural Resources diving team on an as-needed basis. With a resume like this, it didn't surprise anyone when 23-year-old Chandler was given a job at SpaceX, which is the spacecraft manufacturing company founded by Elon Musk. The starting salary was hard to beat. Straight out of college, with an associate's degree, he was looking at a salary of $80,000 a year. The job was set to start sometime in mid-June 2021, and it was going to require an eventual move to Florida to be near Cape Canaveral. Chandler's girlfriend, Catherine, planned to move with him, and Chandler bought a car and rented an apartment down there for them. There were a few issues that seemed to delay the move, but one jeopardized the job entirely. Unfortunately, shortly before Chandler was to start this new job, he was running down the stairs when he slipped. As he fell back, he smacked his head on a step, getting a concussion. Chandler was seen in the ER where he was told he needed to rest, but he'd be okay. But then he wasn't. Chandler complained of lingering symptoms like tingling in his legs, confusion, weakness, sensitivity to light, and headaches. He said his doctor didn't want him to travel to Florida just yet, as there were concerns now that there were some larger neurological issues due to the fall. This delayed his start time with SpaceX, and he told his parents at one point that he was concerned they were going to pull the offer. And this wasn't the only thing Chandler was dealing with at that time. It seemed like one thing after another for the previous year. Like with his job at the insurance company. Now that Chandler was working, he was expected by his parents to start paying more of his bills, even though he was living at home. When he didn't pay, Bart asked about it. Chandler said that there had been some clerical issue when he started. They added him to the payroll, but as an hourly employee, not salary. And since he didn't log hours, he didn't get a paycheck. They were working on getting that fixed. When Bart asked several weeks later to see if it was sorted out, Chandler said that thankfully it had been, but that's when they realized there was another issue. Chandler had messed up his direct deposit information, so the money had been paid out into the ether. It was taking a little bit of time to get the company to fix it so that the money would go into his account. After that was fixed, there was another issue. The company had sorted out all the payroll problems and issued Chandler a check for the total owed. At this point, it was a couple months of back pay. Well, when his bank saw that check, it got flagged as being potentially fraudulent due to the size of it. Chandler would not have any access to the money until they finished the investigation. As an accountant, Bart thought all of this sounded pretty weird, but Chandler had forwarded emails between him and the company's HR so that Bart could see what was going on and see that Chandler was trying to fix it. But it wasn't just the job that was being weird. It was the college as well, where Chandler had enrolled in 2018 and should be nearing graduation. Back in August of 2020, the college would not give Chandler the paperwork he needed to file for financial aid and scholarships. Because this was during the height of COVID, it was hard to get in touch with people at the college since there were so few on campus at that point. And they were short-staffed like everywhere else. They were also not holding any in-person meetings. So to talk to anybody, you had to call, you had to catch someone who was there, and then you had to set up a Zoom call to have your sit-down meeting. Every time Bart or Chandler got some type of Zoom appointment set up, it would get canceled. Bart was incredibly frustrated with this dragging on, as it was costing them money since Chandler couldn't get any financial aid. Bart eventually emailed and told them that it was unprofessional how they were continually canceling the meetings. Then the spring of 2021 semester came around and Chandler got that job with SpaceX, but he needed his transcript to submit to the company, but the school wouldn't give it to him. Bart decided to jump in and try to help push the school for this paperwork. Chandler gave his dad the number to his advisor so he could just call directly. Bart talked to the advisor named Daniel on the phone, and he said Chandler was on target for graduating once he finished his last class successfully, which it looked like he would be. After Bart hung up with Daniel, he sent Krista an email recapping the call, and he mentioned something in that email that's pretty interesting. He noticed that the advisor, Daniel, had a very similar voice to Chandler. On June 29th, 2001, with all of the delays with SpaceX happening, Bart decided to call the college as they still hadn't given Chandler the transcript, even though the last class was finished. But instead of calling the advisor's number that Chandler had given him, Bart looked up the administration office and called directly. Since Chandler was an adult, Bart was pretty sure they wouldn't give him the information over the phone, so he pretended to be Chandler when he called. Bart was told by the customer service rep at the school to go online to request the transcript, and he said that had been done repeatedly, but they never got it. The man then looked up the account for him and saw that Chandler owed over $2,000 on his account and said that would have been a reason the transcript wouldn't have been given. Bard asked if they could schedule a time to come in to pay that bill and sort out whatever the issue was. He was told he didn't need an appointment for that. He could just come in and pay, and then they would give him an unofficial transcript immediately while he waited for the official one to come in the mail. Bart then asked about getting a copy of a certificate that Chandler had earned while studying at the school. The man said that he did not see on the transcript that that certificate had ever been earned. It seems Bart may have been questioning quite a bit in his mind because he then asked if on the transcript they could see the spring 2021 internship. And the man said no. If the internship was through the school, as Chandler had told his parents it was, it would have shown up. Bart got quiet on this call for a second, and then he started asking about the names of the people he and Chandler had previously been emailing with at the college. The man looked all of them up, including Daniel, the advisor, who Bart had spoken to on the phone, and none of them were employees. It was obvious that Chandler had been lying about his schooling, and he had gone to some lengths with all these fake emails and phone numbers to cover it up. Bart then sent Chandler a text that said he spoke with the school and we don't know exactly what happened after that. Whatever conversation Bart and Chandler had, Krista and Chandler had, Krista and Bart had, that was done in person and not over text. But Bart's calendar showed that he had plans to go up to the college with Chandler on July 1st at 3 p.m. According to the college, no one came. Then on Friday, July 2nd, Krista Halderson did not show up for work. Her coworker and friend Daniel texted and called her throughout the day with no response. And it wasn't like Krista to miss work, so Daniel and his girlfriend decided to go to the house that afternoon to see if everything was okay with her and Bart. When they got there, they knocked at the door, but no one answered. They didn't see anything when they looked through the window except that the coffee table was up on its side by the fireplace. They then checked the garage and saw Bart and Krista's cars were in there. They then started walking around to the back of the house when Chandler came to the side door. He was wearing only a towel and he said he had just gotten out of the shower, which is why he didn't hear them knock. Daniel said they were checking up on Krista after she missed work, and Chandler said that she and Bart had actually gone to the family cabin that morning to deal with an emergency situation. This cabin had been built by Krista's grandparents in the 1940s, and it was located in a remote area about 3 hours north of where the Haldersons lived. According to Chandler, there had been some sort of issue with the plumbing and they had to go up there to fix it. They rode up with some friends, though, which explained why their cars were still at the house. While it was not like Krista to not call if she was going to miss work, maybe in the rush, she had forgotten. Daniel noticed that Chandler had a bandage on his toe, and Chandler mentioned that he was playing ball with the dog in the house and accidentally shattered a pane of glass from the front of the fireplace. He stepped on a shard, slicing his toe open. 2 days later, on Sunday, July 4th, Chandler called Daniel and said he was looking for something to do, and Daniel invited him over to do fireworks at his house. Chandler and his girlfriend, Catherine, arrived around 8:30. While Chandler was over there, he mentioned to Daniel that he had heard from his mom and their plans were to be home late on Monday, which was the next day. But then, on Monday, the next day, Chandler texted Daniel and said that Krista was going to be home later than planned and asked if Daniel could put in for another day off for her. On Tuesday, Daniel texted Chandler in the morning and asked to have Krista reach out when she got back into town. He knew she had a very important doctor's appointment after she had been diagnosed with skin cancer, so he wanted to check on her. Plus, if she didn't call in to the boss soon, after missing multiple days, her job was going to be at risk. Chandler's brother Mitchell, who was 25, was also having trouble getting in touch with Krista and Bart. He was used to his mom being over-involved in things, always looking for an excuse to call or text and check on him. It was unheard of to go 4 or 5 days without getting a text or a call. He understood that reception can be spotty up at the cabin, but there was usually at least some communication. On Wednesday morning, July 7th, with still no word from Krista or Bart, everyone was worried. Chandler went to the police station around 11:30 that morning to file the missing persons report. He told the police he hadn't seen his parents since the evening of July 1st. He helped them pack for the trip to the cabin, and they told him that they were going with another couple. He assumed the other couple would have been someone he knew, but they didn't give him the name. When he woke up around 6:15 or so on Friday morning, his parents had already left, hoping to beat the holiday weekend traffic. Chandler said his mother had texted him on the morning of July 4th to let him know that they were going to White Lake for the 4th of July parade. The text said, quote, "Made it safely, can't get anything through, and yes, it's packed. Going to White Lake today for the parade, and we'll be home Monday night / Tuesday early. Love you lots." End quote. After the missing persons report was filed, the police called up north to the county where the cabin was to have some local police go check on the couple there. They went out there and saw no cars and no one answered the door when they knocked. Meanwhile, the investigators in Windsor went out to the Halderson home to look around and talk to Chandler. They walked through the house with Chandler and he gave them the same story again on when they left and pointed out some things that they had taken with them. Somehow Chandler's injured toe came up and he mentioned how he hurt it. He said he ended up trailing blood through the house as he got himself to the bathroom to clean and bandage it. Now the next day on July 8th, Mitchell decided to go with his fiancée up to the family cabin to see for himself what was going on. When they got up there, they met with the deputies to take a walk around the property, looking around to see if anything was out of place. Mitchell had brought with him a set of keys he thought were for the cabin, but it turned out they didn't work. So he gave permission for the police to force entry. When they got inside the cabin, they saw nothing to indicate that anything bad had happened there. But they also saw nothing to indicate that anyone had even been to the cabin recently. Whatever happened didn't happen at the cabin, which put the text Chandler received from his mom into question. He said he got a text that they had made it to the cabin safely and they were headed into town for some holiday events. But it looked like they had never made it to the cabin after all. The local police up near the cabin also thought the text was odd for another reason. Krista texted on July 4th that they were headed to the White Lake 4th of July parade. However, the parade occurred the day before on July 3rd. Chandler suggested it might be due to the reception issues up there. Between the spotty reception and the fact that his parents would sometimes turn their phones off to avoid roaming charges, he thought it was possible maybe she did try to send it on July 3rd, but it didn't go through until the 4th. While Mitchell was up at the cabin doing his own legwork on the case, Chandler was in the neighborhood of their home in Windsor asking neighbors about any security cameras they might have. Perhaps if they could see the couple leaving, they could at least get a description of the car they were riding in. Chandler found one neighbor who did have a Ring doorbell and a camera on their garage. He asked if the camera would have been able to see the road or the house, and she said maybe. It was actually her sister's house, so she didn't know the details of what it covered. but she said the police had already been over there and downloaded all of the video recordings. Chandler asked if she knew if the police saw anything helpful, and she said she didn't know, but she hoped that something on there could help.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album. Pop Apologists. Pop Apologists.
The police were also at that time speaking with the people close to Krista and Bart to try to figure out if anyone else knew anything or had heard from them. And in doing this, they went to speak with Chandler's girlfriend, Catherine. Chandler and Catherine had been together since August of 2019, shortly before he moved into that apartment with his friend. She was looking forward to moving with him to Florida, but she knew it was up in the air due to his injury. Catherine said she spent most of the weekend with Chandler, with one pretty notable exception. She had planned to see him on July 3rd, which was the Saturday, but he texted her and said he would be busy with chores all morning. That seemed fine until she opened her Snapchat app to message a friend and she saw Chandler's location. So for those who don't know, which includes me before I started covering this and had to ask my kids how Snapchat worked, Snapchat has a location sharing feature. You can share your location with your friends and you can select who can and cannot see that. Chandler had his location turned on for Snapchat so that Catherine could see it. It was an agreement they came to after she found out Chandler had been bragging to his friends that he was cheating on her repeatedly, and she was none the wiser. After she confronted him about this, he agreed, in order to rebuild trust, to leave his location on so she would know where he was. And, well, on the Saturday morning, Chandler was not where he said he would be. He wasn't at home doing chores, but rather near Roxbury, Wisconsin, which was about 30 minutes away. But he wasn't at anyone's house. He was in the woods along the Wisconsin River. Catherine took a screenshot of this since Chandler was not where he said he would be. The police asked if they could download the data from her phone, and she agreed. She was hoping to help in any way she could to help find Bart and Krista. Over the 2 years she was dating Chandler, she had become close to them, particularly Krista. The police also spoke with Catherine's mother and her partner, Crescent. Crescent told the police that Chandler had been over for a 4th of July party at the family's property in Cottage Grove. The next day, he came back, driving Bart's car around 5:30 in the evening and asked if he could use their pool. He said the water helped with his head and neck injury. This was the first time in all of the time that he had been dating Catherine that Chandler ever came over alone. He seemed upset as he told Crescent that the doctor had told him some very bad news at his most recent appointment. He was facing surgery to repair the damage from his fall, and it looked like he may not be able to take that job in Florida after all. Crescent asked if he talked to his parents about it, and he said that they were up at their cabin and he was worried they were just going to be angry about it. She didn't know why he would think this, but she didn't pry. She then went inside to let Chandler use the pool in peace. After about an hour, she and Catherine's mother went out to use the pool themselves and saw that Chandler wasn't out there. The pool cover hadn't even been removed, but the vehicle he drove was parked where he left it near a tree line by a shed. They noticed the hatch of the car was open, so they walked over there to see what Chandler was up to, but he was not near the car. They figured he must have gone out for a walk, so they went back to the pool and got in the water. It was about an hour and a half total from when Crescent last saw Chandler before he walked out of the woods surrounding the shed area. Chandler then got into the pool to refresh after what they assumed was a nice hike, but instead of relaxing his body and his neck in the pool, he appeared to be washing himself off before he hopped out. Crescent then mentioned to the police that days later she saw vultures circling the property, which was unusual. With permission, the police began a search of this property around 3 p.m., and they started by the shed where Chandler had parked. They noticed that there was an area where the grass was matted down, so they followed that back until they got to a moss-covered log. And this log had a chunk of moss scraped off. And just beyond that, there was a large pile of brush and sticks. A detective noticed something odd in the mess of sticks and took a closer look. He later said it took him a minute to process what he was seeing. It was a human torso of a male, missing the head and arms. It still had on a black belt and cargo shorts, but no shirt. They also found a tarp. While the police were searching Crescent's property, Chandler Halderson called the police. He was at home and said he saw a few squad cars just parked on the street, and he was wondering what was going on. The detective who answered said he wasn't entirely sure, but they probably had just been canvassing, and now that there was a shift change coming up, they were likely sitting in their cars writing up their reports. On this call, the detective sounded incredibly nonchalant as he's talking to Chandler, probably because he purposely doesn't want to tip him off that they had found any evidence. It wasn't long after this call before one of the police officers went up to the door and asked Chandler to come into the station for an interview. The interview, which lasted around 2 hours, covered a lot of the same ground as the previous interviews. Chandler gave largely the same story he had been giving about this last-minute trip to the cabin and the details of how he hurt his toe. And when it comes to hurting that toe, they asked him more about this, and he said that Catherine had brought him a mop and some hydrogen peroxide to clean up the mess. This is something she had also told the police. So the investigators asked Chandler if his parents' blood would be found in the house, and he said, maybe. He said Bart had psoriasis, and when he picked at it, it would bleed. And Krista was prone to severe nosebleeds. They finally, at this point, let Chandler know that they knew more than he realized, though they held back exactly what that was. They said they knew he wasn't telling the truth, and they were giving him one more chance. Chandler then asked for a lawyer. The interview stopped at this point, and at around 6:45 in the evening, Chandler Halderson was arrested for providing false information on a missing persons report. Once in handcuffs, Chandler started talking again, though this is after the interview ended, so it was no longer being recorded. He reportedly told the detectives that they didn't know the whole story. But he had invoked his right to an attorney at that point, so there wasn't much more they were going to say back to him to prod him with questions. Any answers they got would likely not be admissible in court. So they took him to booking, and after finishing the process, they asked a pretty standard question, and that was if he was suicidal. And Chandler's response was that he didn't feel bad about what he did. While Chandler was sent to lockup, a search of the property continued. In an old oil drum or maybe a water tank, there were scissors found, a broken saw, and pruning shears. Elsewhere, they found a bag from a department store full of bloody rags. The bag had Catherine's name on the outside since it was from a store pickup order. The state used what was found at the property when they asked the judge for a bond of $1 million, saying that Chandler had lied to the police, sent them all over the state on this search, and he had been seen in the area where unidentified human remains were found. But his defense attorney said that Chandler wasn't charged with anything that could justify such a high bond, and the judge agreed. Chandler was given a $10,000 bond. The prosecutor said they expected more charges very soon. The holdup seemed to be the identification of the remains found at his girlfriend's family property. While they waited on the identification, on July 11th, a search of the Halderson home was conducted, and it took days. The neighbors had already told the police that they saw smoke coming from the chimney, which is an odd occurrence in the summer. So the police immediately searched the fireplace and found more than 200 bone fragments and teeth in the fireplace and the ash deposit tray, including a fragment of a human skull and a patella. They also found a measuring tape nearby, and this led the investigators to believe that Chandler had killed his father, dismembered him, and tried to feed the pieces into the fire. The measuring tape was so that he could check to see if they would fit. The fireplace glass wasn't shattered because he was playing with the dogs, but rather while he was trying to destroy remains. Additionally, on the search, they did find a bloody axe in the garage, as well as blood in other parts of the house. And they found a shell casing in the basement, though they did not find a gun. Also in the house, they found both Bart and Krista's cell phones and IDs. The cell phones had been shoved in a shoe that was under a shelving unit, and they had been wrapped in paper towels and layers of aluminum foil. Bart's phone had not been used since Thursday, July 1st, around 2:10, just 50 minutes before his meeting at the college. The last text sent was to Chandler, and it simply read, quote, "I'm ready whenever you are." Krista's phone, however, was used over the weekend that she and Bart were supposedly at the cabin. It was on July 4th, and it was the text Chandler received about their plans. But cell phone tower records indicated that the text was sent from near the family home, not up at the cabin. In fact, it pinged off the same tower that Chandler's phone pinged off of when he received the text. It looked to investigators like Chandler had used his mom's phone to text himself. The day after the search of the home began, on July 12th, the autopsy had confirmed the torso to be 50-year-old Bart Halderson. He had died by homicidal violence between July 1st and July 8th, having been shot in the back with a high-powered weapon. With that identification, Chandler was charged with first-degree homicide, mutilating a corpse, and hiding a corpse, and the state then got that high bail they wanted. But they still had not found 53-year-old Krista Halderson, though, or at least not enough of her to identify her as a victim. So the search continued, and it was aided greatly by a tip. A woman who was outside playing with her grandchildren near a Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources property in Roxbury, Wisconsin, called about a man she had seen on July 3rd. The man she saw was wearing a backpack, and he was coming from the river. His description matched Chandler Halderson. This area was just about where the Snapchat location services had placed him, or at least placed his phone. On July 14th, a search of that area was conducted. Being a wooded area, it was slow going at first, but the searchers saw something that caught their attention. They approached it, and there they found three body parts. One was an upper thigh, the other was a right leg from the foot up to the hip, and the other was a left foot that was cut right above the ankle. About 2 weeks later, DNA testing confirmed that these remains belonged to Krista Halderson, and Chandler was then charged with another set of the same charges that he had against him for the death of his father. This case moved very quickly. The couple were reported missing on July 7th. Chandler was arrested for the first time on July 8th for filing a false report, and by the end of the month, he was charged with both murders. Though the police searched a number of other places, including a landfill Chandler had gone to that weekend and the pond behind the Haldersons' home, no more body parts were recovered. By late July, they had quite a bit of evidence against Chandler already. And as they continued to put the pieces together before trial, it just piled up. The first was the motive for the murders. The police believed it was because Bart had uncovered one of Chandler's lies, and he was on the verge of uncovering the rest. So let's start with the lie Bart had already uncovered, college. Something Bart hadn't noticed was that every email interaction he had with someone at the college came from a Gmail account, not an official university account. The investigators didn't miss this detail, though, and they checked the IPs, and it looked like those emails were all sent from the Halderson home. Chandler had been emailing these Gmail accounts periodically over the fall of 2020 and the spring of 2021 so that he always had them ready to show to Bart whenever he asked what was going on. But that's not to say that Chandler never went to college. He did. He enrolled in the spring of 2018. He took a few classes and withdrew from others. In the spring of 2019, he signed up for four classes but withdrew from three of them. In the fall of 2019 and the fall of 2020, he signed up for classes, and the ones he didn't withdraw from, he failed. He hadn't earned any credits since the summer of 2019, and he did not take any classes at all in the spring of 2021. With no college enrollment in the spring, that also meant there couldn't have been an IT internship through the school. That HR guy that Chandler was emailing about the paycheck fiasco, that was another Gmail account, and the company confirmed that no one with that name had ever worked there. And no, in case you were wondering, the diving position with the police didn't exist either. Not just that Chandler didn't hold that position, it didn't exist. Normally with these lies, Chandler was making up names of employees and sending random emails. But this time, he made up an entire dive unit, as the Madison police and the Wisconsin DNR just don't have one. He claimed to volunteer for something that didn't even exist. So do we have to mention the $80,000 a year salary with SpaceX also didn't exist? I'm sure you've caught on by now that that also didn't exist, but I want to point it out because he literally sold his girlfriend on this huge move from Wisconsin to Florida, where they were going to have a car and an apartment and live near the beach. But there was no car, there was no apartment because there was no job. In this situation, Chandler had 100% taken advantage of the pandemic. Classes were online, work was remote. He didn't even have to pretend to go anywhere. So much of this case reminds me of the Lori Hacking case. Her husband, Mark, had her preparing for a move across the country for medical school when he hadn't even finished his undergraduate degree. He killed her rather than have his deception exposed to the world. But Mark Hacking had to get up and pretend to go to class and pretend to study. All Chandler had to do was wake up early and get on his computer and say he was working. Instead, he was online playing video games for hours and hours a day. And that video game playing, believe it or not, gets us to the presumed murder weapon. Because it was found. After Chandler had been arrested, in October 2021, Crescent was cleaning out the shed on the property. You know, the one Chandler had parked near. There were some boards propped up against the wall, and she pulled them out. Tucked behind them was a rifle she had never seen before. She said she felt sick when she saw it, but she first checked with her father. He was an avid hunter, and while it didn't look like any gun she saw him hunt with, she thought she should confirm it. When he said it wasn't his, she called the police. The gun was an SKS semi-automatic Soviet rifle, which happened to be the same type of gun that Chandler had been gifted weeks before the murder. The gift came from an online friend named Andrew, who Chandler met in the chat room for one of the games he played. Andrew was in the army and stationed in Germany. They both had an interest in Soviet weapons, and Andrew had managed to get this rifle. He said he shot it a few times, but he didn't like it because it just had too much kick. So when he went to Wisconsin for a couple of days and met Chandler in person in June 2021, he gave it to him. He had no idea Chandler would ever hurt anyone with it. He just wanted to give the rifle to someone who appreciated it. Andrew was under the impression that Chandler's parents were not anti-gun, but then he saw Chandler hide the gun behind some stuff in the basement, so he wasn't so sure. Andrew also gave Chandler the remaining ammo he had for the gun, and the shell casing from the basement that the police found was the same type of ammo that Andrew had given Chandler. This was pretty huge for the case to be able to find the presumed murder weapon and put it in Chandler's possession. It's still not clear if Chandler had been planning his parents' murders when he got the gun or not, because this was before Bart found out that he had lied about school. But it had to feel inevitable at that point that people would find out. He really went too far with the SpaceX job. He had an imaginary start date, so what was he going to do when it came and went and he never moved to Florida? What Chandler did was try to find some reasons to delay it. The first delay tactic was his brother. Mitchell had been hospitalized in the spring of 2021 and diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Given this family emergency, Chandler had to push off the move. Then he started having issues getting the college transcript, but that wouldn't last forever, especially when Bart started intervening. Investigators believed that Chandler needed what they called an escape hatch to get out of the SpaceX lie entirely. And that's when he faked a fall down the stairs. The doctor at the emergency room diagnosed him with a mild concussion, largely based on his self-reported symptoms, and gave him a neck brace to wear as needed. Chandler wore it often to really sell the story that he had a severe injury. He told some people he had a brain bleed and there was nerve damage. He told others that they were talking about giving him a colostomy bag due to loss of function. And he told pretty much everyone the doctor said he absolutely could not fly on an airplane or sit for a long car ride, which were his two options for getting to Florida for this amazing opportunity at SpaceX. I'm sure it doesn't need to be said, but the investigation found that no doctor diagnosed Chandler with any of these things. Chandler had found his way out of the SpaceX lie, but he had pushed it too long, and Bart was finding out. On the morning of July 1st, around 7:30, Chandler messaged his girlfriend. He told Catherine that he had hardly slept that night. She replied that she was sorry and asked why. He responded that things haven't been going well for him and he was trying to plan for the next thing to F him over. Catherine wrote back that it was going to be okay, and Chandler replied that he had a great future planned and it was falling apart. Chandler got up that morning having barely slept and knowing the full extent of his lies were about to be exposed if he went to that college appointment with his dad. And he stopped it, according to the state, by killing his parents. Chandler, however, said he was innocent. He pleaded not guilty and filed a request for a speedy trial in late August 2021, which meant the trial had to start within 60 days. It ended up not going quite that fast, but it did start in January 2022, just about 5.5 months after his arrest. The state's theory was that Bart texted Chandler, "I'm ready whenever you are," and knowing that the meeting with the college was about to happen, Chandler made the decision that the only way out was to kill his parents. Shortly before they were scheduled to leave for the college, Chandler shot his father in the back, killing him instantly. Chandler then texted Krista, telling her that Bart's phone had died, so to text him if she needed anything. He then asked her to pick him up a soda on the way home, which the state said was to buy himself more time to do something with Bart's body before she got back. Krista replied that she could do that and included a smiling emoji. Evidence showed that Krista then left work a little before 5 p.m. Video from the neighbor's doorbell showed her pulling in at 5:12. The prosecution said this was right before she walked in the house and Chandler killed her as well. Then, based on the neighbor's security camera, the same one Chandler had been so curious about, Krista's car pulled out of the driveway at 8:16 p.m. At 8:22 at a local gas station, the same car pulled in. The man who got out of the car bought 2 bags of ice using Venmo. And at 8:29, the car returned home. Using Venmo records, they could show that the purchase was made by Chandler. The prosecution said that the ice was to preserve the bodies while Chandler figured out what he was going to do with them. Chandler decided he was going to burn the bodies in the fireplace. Since they wouldn't fit whole, he used a variety of tools to dismember them and burn as much as he could. From the neighbor's security footage, they could see the light from the fireplace flickering on Friday, July 2nd. Chandler must have realized that this was just not going to work to destroy all of the remains, so he opted to then scatter whatever was left, thinking they'd be less likely to be found, and if they were, it would be harder to connect random body parts to his parents. But because Chandler wasn't half as smart as he thought he was, he used his girlfriend's family property to hide Bart's torso. At a time, people knew he was on the property. Venmo records also showed that Chandler had purchased a tarp at 7:20 on July 2nd, consistent with the tarp found near the torso. And then he left his Snapchat location on while discarding his mother's legs. The state had even more digital evidence beyond just Snapchat and cell phone records. They had searched Chandler's computer. The day after reporting his parents missing, Chandler was online looking for news on the case. That is totally normal. What was suspicious were the phrases he searched. Body found Wisconsin and woman's body found Wisconsin were the first two searches, and those are pretty generic. But the third search was Wisconsin dismembered body found. If Chandler had nothing to do with his parents' deaths, as his defense claimed, why was he looking to see if a dismembered body was found at 9:44 in the morning when his father's torso had not been found yet? At this point in the investigation, the only person who knew dismemberment was involved was the killer. Chandler also searched for, quote, body found in Milwaukee River 2021, which makes me wonder if that's where additional remains may one day be found. The defense called no witnesses, rather trying to build reasonable doubt through their opening and closing statements, as well as through cross-examination. The defense was, to simply put it, Chandler didn't do it. The state, according to the defense, had a massive gap in their case where they can show what happened before the murders and then after, but not during. The state's narrative started with the assumption that Chandler did it and built it out from there. But if you remove that assumption, the case falls apart. I mean, that's not what I'm saying. That's what the defense was saying. I think this case was a slam dunk. The main counter the defense presented was to the cell phone evidence. They pointed out that cell phone evidence tells you where the phone was, not the person. But if you're going to use this as the defense, you're basically saying that the reasonable alternative suspect would be someone who had access to Chandler's phone and was moving around the area where his mom's legs were found, when Chandler never claimed that his phone had been stolen or used by anyone else that weekend. After 2 hours of deliberation, the jury came back with the only verdict a reasonable jury could come to: guilty on all counts. On March 17, 2022, Chandler was sentenced. He did make a brief statement at sentencing, saying that he intended to appeal his convictions and asked for any lawyer who wanted to help him to come forward. And then he said it's not that he didn't have feelings, but that he was warned not to show them due to scrutiny on the case. He didn't elaborate on this any further. He did not express sorrow or grief for the loss of his parents. He didn't send a message to his family and friends or any supporters he had. Nothing. He just wanted an attorney to help him appeal, and then he was sentenced to life without parole. Chandler did manage to have an attorney look over his case, but just because you have an attorney doesn't mean they can really help you. In March of 2023, Chandler's new counsel filed a no-merit appeal. This type of appeal is interesting. It's basically what it sounds like. The attorney found no merit on with which to appeal. Not that they didn't find anything they thought could win. They are saying they couldn't find anything at all to appeal based on. It's the convicted's attorney basically saying, my client should lose this appeal. So why file that at all? And that is a good question. An attorney who finds no issues to appeal on should give their client other options before filing a no-merit appeal, and that's according to Wisconsin statutes. Chandler could have hired a different attorney to look at the case. He could have filed the appeal on his own without an attorney, going pro se, or he could have dropped the appeal altogether. The no-merit appeal can only be filed if the client either requests it to be filed or does not agree to have the attorney close the file and stop representing them. We don't know yet which category Chandler falls into. Chandler will have the opportunity to respond to this filing, and he can bring up any issues he thinks exists that his attorney did not see, like a ruling on the admissibility of some evidence. If he does not raise any issues from the trial to counter his own attorney saying there are no issues, he won't be able to bring them up later. Really, at the end of the day, I think any path Chandler Halderson goes in this appellate process is going to be hard for him. It's going to be an uphill battle convincing anyone that the state didn't prove its case and that Chandler should ever get out of prison. Thank you for listening. You can find Crimelines on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and occasionally TikTok. Crimelines is on Patreon, where I offer early and ad-free episodes, as well as bonus content. Visit patreon.com/crimelines. If you want to buy me a coffee, the official drink of Crimelines, you can give a one-time donation at basementfortproductions.com/support. And if you need a palate cleanser after listening to heavier true crime shows, check out Rusty Hinges, an allegedly funny history, mystery, and true crime show that I co-created and write for.